You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, so I'm going to be teaching on parenting and emotions. About me, I'm a mom. I have two girls, ages 11 and 13, and I've been married for 18 years. I'm a medical assistant, and I work at a pediatrics practice, so I encounter kids a lot. And a lot of emotions. I like to call myself a professional feeler. I have a lot of really strong emotions. Some people say I run hot, and I've gotten myself into a lot of trouble emotionally, even recently. So I feel like qualified in that regard. Just a qualification, we're not going to be talking about any mental health stuff or I'm not a professional in any way. So this is just going to be the stuff that I've learned and that I want to share with you. I have a lot of resources. I'm also a big reader. So here are some resources that I've had. Honestly, it's probably like twice as much as these books that I'm showing you. But there's a lot of really good books out there. Parenting. I'd say parenting is the hardest job with no training. When I had a kid, I had never babysat before. I was not a kid person. I wasn't trustworthy, probably, to babysit anyone's kids in high school. But I had a preemie who was 4 ounces, when we brought her home. I had no idea what I was doing. It was literally the scariest thing in my life. But I do feel like parenting is a gift given to us by God. I've had some of the biggest joys in my whole life come from my kids. I love them so much. And our emotions have a big role to play in our kids' feelings. Parenting is not black and white. There's a lot of gray. My two kids, I had a girl. I thought, oh, great, I'm having another girl. I know this. I got it down. My kids are completely different. The way that I approach them about things, the way that I communicate with them, the things that they need, they're very, very different. And that's really difficult. A lot of confusion and helplessness, insecurity, incompetence, those come up a lot when you're trying to figure out how to deal with your different kids. I think one thing, if you leave here today, is that I want people to feel some grace and compassion from God. No one is a perfect parent. I remember when I was pregnant with my first, and I was talking to an older woman who had raised her kids already, and I was like, I'm going to ruin these kids. Like, I don't know why God is letting me have one. I'm really scared. And she said, if you were the perfect parent, they wouldn't need God. Our incompetence, our failures, those are going to be things that push them to the Lord. So we can rejoice in that, and we can pray that that's what happened. This is one of my favorite verses about parenting. In Isaiah 40:11, it says, he tends to his flocks like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. He gently leads those with young. What a beautiful picture of God's grace and compassion. I really do think that God has a special measure of love for moms. I think that it's really easy. Okay, I heard Mary Beth is teaching on mom guilt. We all experience that. It's really easy to feel really guilty and that things are hard, but God has grace beyond grace for us. I want to talk about some keys to successful parenting. The first, I believe, is a relationship with God. Matthew 7 says, everyone who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like the foolish man who built his house on the sand. I do believe that my relationship with God has been the biggest stabilizing force in my life. I believe my medicine, God, as well as good friends is what has helped me become a parent. Humility and grace as well. With good friends, I can think back and things in my life. You know, when you're a mom with a young baby, maybe you have two kids at home or three, the day-to-day gets really hard. It's kind of like we have blinders on. I can only see what's right in front of me. And I'm blessed to have good friends who are willing to come into my life and have the hard conversation with me, even about my emotions and the impact it was having on my kids. That really changed my perspective. We need to have peers, friends in our lives who are willing to share that hard truth with us. That is going to be significant, like iron sharpening iron. Humility and grace, I think, are essential because it's hard. You're going to mess up. Like I said, no one's a perfect parent. And the ability we have to accept our weaknesses and ask for God's grace is going to really play a big impact on our kids' ability to be able to do that as well. So my concern, the reason why I wanted to do this topic was because I feel like me and my generation, I know I'm probably older than some of you guys here, but a lot of us maybe felt underparented. Maybe our parents didn't really validate our emotions. Maybe they didn't really care. Like, keep crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about. I remember hearing that. And I think that we've swung from this feeling of parents who are disengaged emotionally all the way to this hyper-focus on emotions. It's led to a lot of over-parenting. This is a quote from one of my favorite books, Good Inside. Emotions are highly reactive to our attention to them. Certain kinds of attention to emotions, focus on emotions, can increase emotional distress. And I'm worried that when we try to help our young adults, help our children, what we do is throw oil into the fire. We're basically telling them that this deeply imperfect signal, that is what they're feeling, is always valid, important to track, pay attention, and then use it to guide your behavior. Use it to guide how you act in a situation. This woman is a PhD, and she's the head of the emotional lab at Georgetown University. So she knows what she's talking about. And I think this is really right on. I did a search on kids' planners earlier in the year for my kids, and the amount of them that had emotional trackers in them for elementary students was shocking. It's like, this is the focus now, is what are you feeling? This is something I think that's really important for us to think about. My concern is that these are some statistics I gleaned from some of the research I did. 1 in 6 U.S. children ages 2 to 8 have a diagnosed mental, behavioral, or developmental disorder. Nearly 10% of American teens have a diagnosed anxiety order. I think that this is just 2 statistics out of many that I've gotten. Emotionally, kids are not doing great. I think this generation has the biggest access to mental health resources, and yet statistically they have the worst mental health. I personally have seen this play out a lot at work. I have seen a lot of kids coming in to get diagnoses and get meds, and honestly, it's really sad. And I suspect, I mean, obviously, we have chemical imbalances. I have a chemical imbalance. I also suspect, though, that some of our parenting is developing this in our kids, especially anxiety. It's really crazy to see some of the kids raised during the pandemic and the fear and terror they have of someone else outside of their family touching them. It's gotten to the point where I can't even like listen to a kid's heart or measure them because these kids are so terrified. This is really not setting them up for success in adulthood. It's scary. And so I think that my burden, my concern, comes from my convictions, the things God taught me, and also what I'm seeing. What I want to get at today is that we have a responsibility as parents to help our kids learn how to navigate their emotions and teach them emotional resilience. We're going to be talking about 4 specific jobs as a parent that can help develop this. Emotions are defined as conscious mental reactions subjectively experienced as strong feelings, usually directed towards a specific object, and typically accompanied by physiological and behavioral changes to the body. I was like telling my sister earlier, oh God, I'm gonna get the nervous sweats when I'm up here. When I get nervous, I get sweaty. We talk about nervous belly in my house too. My kids will have like belly aches. You know, they'll have GI upset right before they're nervous about something. There's a lot of physiological things that happen with emotions. Emotions reveal our values and beliefs. The things that we care a lot about are the things that we feel a lot about. Emotions are catalysts to actions. Think about like crimes of passion. Someone is so overwhelmed by feelings of anger, whatever it is, that they react in this crazy way. They also influence our behavior. Think about you feeling great as a mom, waking up good mood. Your day's pretty good. The way you interact with your kids are influenced by that. Having a bad day, it affects me and the way I deal with my children and other people. Emotions are not always rational. They are not based in reality a lot of the times. They're a response to our perceptions. I get in my head a lot, and it's really easy for me to think like, well, this person must think this about me, or this situation is this way, and it impacts the way I feel. That's just me thinking about stuff. That's not truth. And they're pretty bad guides. The Bible, though, the biblical perspective on emotions is really cool. God is an emotional being. This is a fraction of the verses that I've gotten from this study. But we see that God has so many emotions. We see Jesus display so many emotions. Also, David in the Psalms. This, again, is a fraction of what I've seen. David talks to God all the time about his feelings. He shares his happiness, his anger, his frustration, his fear, his brokenheartedness, his zeal. The Bible is full of this example. I remember, I got into some trouble, like I said, with my emotions, and it sparked this idea of doing a study on emotions in the Bible. And I feel like it was easy to always feel really guilty about being so emotional. It's kind of like, oh, you're an emotional person, like you're crazy or whatever. But that's not true. Biblically, emotions are really valuable. Emotions are something that God can use in a big way to connect us to him, to influence other people, to get his message across. It's not bad. It's not sinful to be emotional. There's a lot of biblical feelers. Jonah, Nehemiah, Moses, Joseph, Peter. Peter is my favorite because Peter was a hot mess. We know Peter reacted a lot and did crazy things, and yet God used him in a powerful way. He wasn't disqualified because he had hot emotions, you know, yet God was able to use those emotions to harness them in a way to influence other people. And we see through the word that Peter, it's not like he got mature all of a sudden and then he was great and didn't have any problems. No, he had significant problems throughout his whole life with his emotions, the way he was influenced by people. But God is a redeeming God. What a beautiful picture. I mean, this again is just a fraction of the biblical feelers. So yeah, like I said, it's not sinful to be emotional, but it's sinful to let our emotions run the show. And God wants to help mature us in this area. I think that this is an area that we have kind of walled off a lot of times with the Lord. A lot of times we don't even know how we're feeling, but this is something that God wants us to explore and invite him into, and something that he can make big changes in. So emotional resilience, the goal. Is the ability to adapt to stressful situations and cope with life's ups and downs. The goal is not to get rid of emotions or emotional responses in our kids, but move towards emotional health and healthy coping skills. I really like this verse. I feel like I've got a few verses from 2 Cor, but I feel like this is a good picture of emotional resilience, and I think a lot of that resiliency comes from God and the stability these guys have. He says, "We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raised the dead." Despairing of life itself. I don't know about you, but I've been there as a mom. Like what? It's just exhausting. We saw this word bubble. You know, we feel a lot of things. But God can use these emotions and our ability to deal with them to push us towards him. Again, in 2 Corinthians 4, he says, "We're hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not abandoned, struck down, but not destroyed." Another quote from this book, Good Inside. She says, "When we focus on happiness, we ignore all the other emotions that will inevitably come up throughout our kids' lives, which means we aren't teaching them how to cope with these emotions." And again, how we teach our kids through our interactions with them to relate to pain or hardship will impact how they think about themselves and their troubles for decades to come. We want our kids to feel a wide range of feelings and have new experiences. And our job is to help them build resilience by teaching them to cope with whatever the world throws at them. The goal is not to shut down their feelings or teach kids to turn away from what they notice. Let me see. The goal is to teach our kids how to manage all of these feelings and perceptions and thoughts and urges. We are the primary vehicle for this teaching, not through lectures or logic, but through experiences our children have with us. We are the key way our kids are going to learn how to develop emotional resilience, how to think about their feelings, how to manage them. There's a lot of benefits with emotional resilience. Kids who have this, kids who are able to cope with stressful situations, recover quicker from setbacks. It builds confidence in them and helps them feel capable, and it keeps them away from harmful behaviors. A lot of kids who get into trouble are insecure, and they're trying to figure out, you know, who am I? What do I need? I need approval from someone else. I think, again, benefits are they're capable of problem solving and learning new skills. They're less likely to be a problem avoider if they feel like I have the ability to handle hard things. I can handle this. And it helps them develop compassion and empathy. Struggling is the thing that develops that in our children. Before we get into these jobs, I wanted to discuss brain development. I hope you guys know this is Calico Critters. My kids are really into them. But think of the brain as a two-story house. The first floor is basic functions like breathing, impulses, and emotions. And it's marked by intense emotions and sensations. This is fully built at birth. An infant is born feeling a lot of things. The way that they react to everything is this first floor. The second floor is more complex processes. Planning, decision-making, self-awareness, empathy, and this does not fully develop until age 25. This is pretty mind-blowing. That's a big disparity. So when you think about it, when a child is overwhelmed with emotions and they're unable to regulate themselves and make good decisions, when they're freaking out, this is developmentally normal. I think sometimes it's easy for us to take things personally when our kids are acting wild. But nope, this is how their brains work. This is very normal. It's not fun for us, but that's how they are. I think our job as parents is to be the staircase that links these two floors together. We can do that by connecting their feelings, their emotional responses with self-awareness, with planning, with regulation, with decision-making. And we're going to talk about the ways that we can do that with these parenting jobs. The first one is connection. The second one is boundaries. The third, coaching, and the fourth, repair. Connection. Emotional health starts with connection. This is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is an old psychologist who figured out kind of here are the things that people need in their life to be healthy. Love and belonging is really important in there. Our kids' attachment is really important, not only at birth, but throughout life. This is the one book I can remember reading before I had kids. This lady I was telling you about that was giving me advice was like, what you need to do is just read this book. Because I'm like, I'm not going to be able to handle this. I don't know how to be a normal person with children. He cites four things that really help us love our kids. That's eye contact, physical contact, focus, attention, and discipline. Eye contact, I think, is really important nowadays, too, because we're so busy on our phones. How often are our kids seeing our eyes? Think about body language and how much we express without words. It's significant and important to have meaningful eye contact. I think sometimes, too, it's easy to use eye contact as like a disciplinary thing. Like, you're like, you better not be doing that. Like, watch it. But it's also important to use it as a loving thing, as a way to have our kids feel connected. Physical contact. I am not a touchy-feely person. I don't really like physical contact. But this was something I prayed about so, so much, and something that I feel like God has really blessed me in this way. Kids need physical contact. Even teenagers, they need physical contact. It's really important. He has really good studies in here if you guys are interested. Focused attention. You know, intentionally spending time with your kid. This doesn't have to be hours and hours. This could be 20 minutes where you're like, hey, I want to play a game with you, or I want to know what's going on in your life. Let's go on a walk. And discipline, which we're going to get more into. I think an important thing to realize is that our emotions have a big impact on our connection with our kids. And I think that's a good reason for us to pursue growing in this area, to pursue sanctification and understanding more of our emotional state. I think that it's really important for kids to feel seen and to sense that their parents are on their team. It's really normal and easy for it to be me against you. That's kind of the natural thing. But it doesn't have to be that way. I remember coming into fellowship and meeting a mom who was really cool with her daughter in high school, and they had never had big, they had fights, they would make each other mad, but it wasn't some crazy thing. And I thought, that's possible? I just thought everybody hates their mom in high school. That's just how it is. But no, it can be us against your problems. I have a older girl who we have been discussing high schools with, and we're going to do Columbus Public with a bunch of other friends. And, you know, we've been thinking and praying about this for years and years and years. She was really into it up until the week after we toured the school, and we were 100% sold. All of a sudden, she's like, I don't want to go there anymore. I want to go to this other school that's, like, super far away. She doesn't have any peers there, but her cousin goes there, and he's older. My reaction was like, what? One, you don't have a choice. Like, you don't get to pick this. And two, what are you thinking? What's wrong with you? But I was able to have self-control and not be reactive, and instead tried to approach it a different way. I tried to maintain this connection. I do feel like studying for this teaching actually helped me to be able to do this. And instead of, you know, confronting her, like, what's going on, I was able to say, tell me more about this. Why do you want to do this? Why are you feeling this way? Okay, let's think about it. Let's pray about it. Let's discuss this more. We were able to have these really great conversations, and she came to the conclusion that she wants to go to the school that she's going to go to. I was able to kind of bypass this confrontation, this issue of, you know, rupturing our connection just by taking some time and thinking about it and being intentional. I think that this is something that we need to do more and more, and especially as they get older. I feel really grateful to this teaching for the ability to be able to do that. I think it's important to help kids understand that they're good feelers of their feelings. It helps them trust their internal emotional awareness. I feel like I didn't have this when I was young. I always thought, like, oh, I must just be wrong. Everybody else is right. And I would kind of get my security and my identity from how other people thought of me, how they treated me. And this led me to really not be able to have a security and a sense of trusting my own emotions. It got me into a lot of situations where it's like, I know this probably isn't good or this is a dangerous thing, but I want them to be happy with me, so I'm gonna do it anyways. I think that they are able to trust their internal emotional awareness when we're connected, and it leads kids to be able to deal with struggles much easier. Think about this. Your kid comes home from school and he's like, he's crying, and you're like, what's going on? He's like, I wasn't picked first or even second or even third for the basketball game. I was picked last, and he's so sad. My reaction when my kid comes home and they're super sad is I'm like, oh, no, it's fine. Don't even worry about it. Remember last week you were picked first for dodgeball? You're so good at dodgeball. Don't worry. It's fine. Don't worry about it. You're such a good basketball player. It's almost like we gaslight our kids because we don't feel comfortable with their feelings about being upset. Instead, if we can say to them, I believe you. Gosh, I'm really sorry. That's really sad. I remember being little and not getting picked for anything because I'm not good at sports. Like, that's really hard. This helps a kid realize it's okay to feel how I feel. It's okay to be upset because this is upsetting. But it also helps them not to be stuck and focus and ruminate on it. It's like you can kind of acknowledge it. Yeah, that's really hard. I'm sorry. And then they can move on quicker. We're going to talk about boundaries as the second parenting job. The American Society of Landscape Architects did a study in 2006 that won like a ton of awards. It was about fences around playgrounds and the impact fences around playgrounds have versus playgrounds with no fences on how kids play. They said the overwhelming conclusion was that with a given limitation, children felt safer to explore a playground. Without a fence, the children were not able to see a given boundary or limit, and thus were more reluctant to leave the caregiver. With a boundary, in this case the fence, the children felt at ease to explore the space. They were able to separate from the caregiver and continue to develop in their sense of self while still recognizing that they were in a safe environment within the limits of the fence. Kids need boundaries. Kids thrive on boundaries. They need it. It's essential to helping them regulate their feelings and to feel safe and secure. When you're insecure, it's really hard to have any sort of regulation. Your emotions are feeling out of control. I think one of the things I learned in some of these books is most of the time, boundaries are not what we tell our kids to do, but what we tell them we are going to do. And I think it's a consistent consequence that we have to have, especially when they're young. This is really important. I'm not very good at this, I'll tell you that. My husband is a lot better at this, thank God. And these grow and change with age. Think about your kids hitting each other. Brother's smacking a sister, he's older. You want to just be like, what is wrong with you? You do not hit girls. Get your hands off. You want to yell at them across the room. That's not going to work. Remember, the first floor is activated, but the second floor is not. We need to get up. And with kids this age, we need to physically get in between them and separate them and say, you cannot hit your sister. I'm not going to allow you to do that. This helps them connect. Okay, I'm upset and I'm mad and I'm reacting in this way and it's not appropriate. I think, too, as kids get older, I think about this a lot. I don't know about you guys, but I love these new true crime shows on Netflix, and I've been staying up way too late watching TV, and I feel like I know I need to wake up really early tomorrow for work, but I just can't shut my laptop. But then I come downstairs, you know, and I expect my kids to just shut off the TV when I tell them to. Screen time's over. It's really hard. I'll be yelling from the kitchen, I told you to shut off the TV. What's wrong with you? Sometimes they just have a really hard time making decisions. So I go down there and I shut it off. And then maybe, you know, if this keeps happening, I can say, you can't watch TV tomorrow. Like, you don't listen. You're not following the rules. You have to get to bed at a certain time. I think, yeah, as we grow, as our kids grow, we have to learn new boundaries for them. With boundaries, feelings are not the issue, but behaviors are. We need to put boundaries in place when dealing with behaviors. It's important, like we said, kids need to feel however they feel, that the problem isn't how they feel, but how they react. And I think it's important to pick your battles about this. I don't know, but for some reason, sometimes I just want to say no all the time. Like, they'll be like, can I do this? I'm like, no. And then I'm like, why did I say no? Like, maybe I'm just in a bad mood or something. And then I have to be like, actually, you can do that. And it's called inconsistency. Kind of deciding, okay, here's some of the things that we value as a family, and here's the boundaries that we're going to put in place for our kids. Also, it's really important to get on the same page with your spouse. We've been played so many times by our kids where they'll ask me for something, and I'll be like, no, you can't do that right now. They'll go downstairs, talk to their dad, and he'll say, yeah. It's like me and my husband are not on the same page. I think that that's going to happen. You're not going to be able to be on the same page about everything, but important, significant things, I think, you should be on the same page with. All right, coaching. So this, my daughter drew this for me one time. She was mad at me about something and upset. She said, Mom, I am sad. And I like this picture because it shows like she understood how she was feeling. She was able to communicate. And I think with coaching, one big part is helping our kids build an emotional vocabulary. There's not just like four emotions, you know, there's a lot of emotions. Helping them understand, you know, oh, it seems like you're feeling stressed right now about this thing, or you're feeling disappointment. We have this word, we have a few words that we've kind of made up in our household, nerve-sighted. It's when you're really excited about something, but you're also super nervous. And this word has helped my kids kind of realize some of the physiological effects, too, that they have when they're nervous. My little one, when I drop her off at preschool, she'd have a bellyache every day. And I'm like, do we need to go to the GI specialist? What's going on? Like, why is she always feeling sick? And I realize, oh, she's got separation anxiety. She feels really yucky in her tummy when I'm gone. We have, you know, we talk about nervous bellies and things like that. It's important for us. That's a one way to link those two floors. I think it's important for us to teach our kids that they are responsible for their own actions, despite how they feel. One of my kids, if she's not feeling good, she's real crabby and mean. And I've always kind of felt bad for her. Like, well, she doesn't feel good, so that's why she's acting like that. But when your 24-year-old isn't feeling good and they go to work and they're real mean to their boss, the boss isn't going to be like, oh, I'm sorry, you're not feeling good. They're going to be like, you're fired, right? We need to help our kids realize no matter what's going on inside, you are responsible for how you treat other people and how you act. And I think in coaching, we can help develop empathy by helping our kids understand other people's point of view. It's really easy for kids just to feel like, to perceive things and act a certain way, you know? And maybe sometimes we understand more things. Well, actually, this kid is having a hard time in this area, and that's why they hurt you. I mean, you have to share appropriately, but helping them see the other person's situation is really important. I think that you should pray for struggles and hardship with your kids and teachable moments. I think this sounds weird, and when my oldest was in preschool, the preschool teacher, Miss Martin, she's the best, she pulled me aside like halfway through the year, and she was like, hey, I want you to pray that she gets in trouble. I want you to pray that Marie gets a timeout, because she's afraid of being in trouble. She's kind of like a little Pharisee. She needs to experience that and get some grace. And I remember feeling like everything in me is like, no, like, I don't want to do that. But I did. And you know what? She got in trouble. She got a timeout. And it was a big thing. It was really hard. But you know what? She's really changed her attitude. I think that our kids are going to have to experience hardship. And with our loving Father involved, he can use that to be teachable moments. These are moments we can bring them to the truth that we're all messed up, we all have problems, and we all need forgiveness. We all need God's grace and intervention in our life through what Jesus did on the cross. Life is not going to be gentle to our kids. It's important for us to realize that now, and frustration and struggle are essential to character building. I think, too, it's important for our kids to learn how to lose, because they're not always going to win things. Participation trophies are not a thing in adulthood. Life is hard. It's important for them to realize it's okay. I'm okay, even if I'm not the best at everything. James 1 says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. All right, the last job that we have is repair. This is my favorite parenting verse. 1 Peter 4:8 says, above all, love each other deeply because love covers a multitude of sins. This idea of repair is in tons of different research studies and textbooks about parenting. And it's going back to the point of rupture, the point of disconnection with our kids. Something happens. Could be something really small, could be something really big. And taking responsibility for what occurred when appropriate. It's inevitable. We are going to lose connection with our kids pretty regularly. Either extenuating circumstances, I'm really stressed out, my anxiety's bad, so I'm being snappy or I'm yelling. This happens a lot when parents are in an emotional state. And this can be yelling at your kid, you know, all different things. Apologies are good, but I think they kind of close conversations. It's like, hey, I'm really sorry that I did that. Okay, let's move on, you know. Repair is this idea of going back and saying, man, I yelled at you. That must have felt really bad. I'm sorry. Let's talk about this. I have all different experiences about repair. And I did a bad thing when I was studying for this. And I was telling my cell group that I'm failing at the thing I'm studying about how to do. My daughter was really concerned about homeless people. She's super sensitive. We live off 161. There's always people like begging off of 71. It was a long day. I'd worked a really long day. I was really stressed out. She comes in and she's like, "Oh, Mom, I'm just so upset about the homeless people." Especially this one guy who had a dog. She was like really upset about the dog. And I was like, "It's fine. They're fine. They're probably on drugs. It's fine. Don't worry." And she's like, "Okay." And then she goes to bed. And I'm just like, "Oh no, what did I do?" Like, one, she's being empathetic and compassionate. And I'm like, "They're drug addicts. It's fine. Don't worry about it." That was a point of rupture for us, where I had to go back to her the next day and say, "May, you were sharing with me that you were really feeling bad about these people. I'm sorry that I blew you off. I was stressed out, but that doesn't mean it's okay. And it is really sad that this guy and his dog are homeless. And here are some things that, you know, are available to people." I was trying to explain and talk to her more. And you could see her, you know, she was like, "Oh, okay, I wasn't wrong for feeling bad about this." Because she wasn't. I just didn't feel like dealing with it. So I think it's important to name what happened and take responsibility for your part. And then, you know, state what you can do differently, or, you know, explain, help them understand better what's going on. One of the most important things we can teach our kids is that they're not responsible for other people's emotions or actions. They're responsible for their own, but not for other people. No matter what happens, everyone is responsible for their own thing, for their own decision-making. When kids feel responsible for others, this links them to shame and negative self-view. When you have a rupture and your kid is feeling really bad, like, "Oh, I'm so bad. My mom's so mad at me. I always mess things up." It's really easy for them to internalize that. Research shows that it's safer for a kid to say, "I'm bad," than "Mom's bad," because you're not safe and secure if mom is bad. You want mom to be safe. So they internalize these things. And that impact it has on adulthood is very, very bad. It's really, really hard for people to have self-esteem, for people to understand their identity. So this is super significant and important. So guys, that's what I had. I wanted to end with this verse because it's also one of my favorites. "Because of the Lord's great love, we're not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They're new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." Again, like I said, my goal today is for you guys to see, you know, to engage with the Lord about your emotions, to engage with God about your kids, and to know it's okay. We're all trying, and love covers a multitude of sins. God, thank you so much for your grace. Thank you for the fact that you want to be involved in our lives. You want to be involved in every aspect of our lives, in our emotional health, in our parenting, in our kids' emotions. I just feel like I would be lost without you, God. You saved me, and can't imagine where I would be without you. Thank you, God, that we have the ability to claim your grace and to be humble and be open about our weaknesses. Help us, God, to feel your presence when we're parenting, and help us to remember some of these things. Help us to remember that our kids are a gift, and I pray that you'd help us to raise kids who know you. Mm-hmm. Amen.